This is the ODG Apparel Podcast.
Wait, I'm not understanding. Why does an apparel company have a podcast, though?
Because they're that awesome.
All right, guys, we have another podcast coming at you. We are so sorry and super bummed that it's taken us this long to get another podcast out. We really want to be consistent with this, but again, as an apparel brand, it's sometimes a little interesting to have a podcast, but we really do enjoy it. We ran into a little bit of a snag with our podcast editor, but we finally got somebody on the team who's crushing it and doing a really good job. So we are going to get these things out to you way more consistently. So this episode, we have Tim Chris. Tim Chris works with Lifeline Children's Services. And so we talk about adoption and kind of what that is in light of the gospel and how we do it as Christians and how we can serve the Lord and the orphan really, really well. So give it a listen. Let us know what you think. We're so thankful for Tim for having, for being on the podcast. And so, yeah, let us know what you think. Enjoy the podcast. All right, guys, this is Dave with ODG Apparel. We are on another long form conversational podcast. On this episode, we have Tim Chris. Tim Chris is the manager of church partnerships for a ministry called Lifeline Children's Services. Tim, how's it going?
Oh, man, doing great, Dave. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. We had a little Eastern Central Time mix-up, but I feel like that's like to be expected. At this point in the game, if my phone doesn't automatically do it, it's never going to work out. Like, it needs to automatically know what I'm thinking.
And absolutely.
I can't think for myself anymore.
So, man, I'm with you there.
We figured it out. We're on. Tim, tell everybody kind of who you are. Introduce yourself a little bit, kind of who you are and what Lifeline Children's Service is all about.
Absolutely. So I'm Tim Christ. I'm married with three kids. One of those, our youngest, is a daughter, and she's adopted and was adopted. She's, just a fireball and acts just like the family. So that's a huge blessing. Never know that she was not born of our blood and genetics. But, so for the past 12 years or so, I've been in church ministry, serving on various roles and church staff across three different churches, from youth ministry to associate pastor, worship leader, and a couple years as a senior pastor. And so my path crossed Lifeline about 12-13 years ago, and ever since then, just keeping in touch with the ministry and seeing how the Lord just blessed this ministry with growth, with impact globally. I can truly say that. And then just the opportunity came up to come on board on staff here to partner up with churches and connect with pastors and staff members, missions pastors, et cetera, and try to connect what we're doing at Lifeline to what churches are doing and helping them to answer the call that we're given in James 1:27 to truly care for orphans in their distress.
Hmm. Yeah, that was kind of the most powerful thing when you reached out to me. When we kind of got connected online and you started explaining to me kind of what you guys do and what you're about. I mean, adoption is something that my wife and I have talked about for a long time, since day one. It's something like, hey, we want to do this. Honestly, we're just having a conversation with a friend of mine this weekend actually about it. And just it's easy to talk about. It's easy to say, ooh, adoption sounds like something I would love to do. Mm-hmm. And then if you're honest, and we were, my friend and I this weekend, it just immediately gets to a place where it's like, wow, but it's different to kind of start the process, right? It's different. It's great to say one day will, but that process is interesting. And he started to talk about how he and his wife had actually even started that process, and you know, which I think, again, we're probably going off the rails a little bit right away. But he just said to me, you know, right away, it can be a really expensive sort of process, not just time, but money wise, like right off the bat. Is that kind of true? Is that real?
Absolutely, man. That is so real. An adoption, either domestic or international, there's a huge price range, depending on any kind of circumstances that may be in the way there with the adoption. But you know, you can look at $15,000 to $50,000 in an adoption, but there's hope in that too, right? There are so many organizations that exist to help you raise the funds that are necessary for the adoption, because we all recognize that the legal costs, between lawyers here and governments and lawyers somewhere else, like, they get really crazy really fast. So these organizations have come along to come alongside the adoptive parents and organizations like ours to say, hey, let us help your parents, let us help the folks that are truly answering this call, and we want to help raise their money for them. We want to help do fundraisers. There are grants available. We actually have some grants internally here that are available to some adoptive parents, specifically for like ministerial staff that want to adopt, because we know working in ministry, you're not doing it for the money, right? But yeah. if you're called to adopt, then we want to help and offer whatever resources we possibly can. So we will. That's a great thing. We'll kind of toss those names out to the adoptive parents that we have and say, hey, don't forget, look over here for money. Mm-hmm. And also, what we've seen too is churches. A lot of churches will truly rally behind families that are answering that call to adopt. And, man, we'll see churches to come together financially and provide majority of the funds just with church members separately. And this isn't coming out of the church budget. This is coming out of people's individual budgets to rally behind these folks and say, hey, we love you. We support you. And praising God for the fact that he's given us resources to be able to help, and that you're reaching out to help a child and bring a child home. And not only to bring a child home, bringing a child into a missional Christian home where they're going to hear the gospel. They're going to grow up with the gospel. They're going to grow up in discipleship just within their own home and within their own church family.
Yeah, that's powerful. So specifically with the ministry that you're a part of, Lifeline, what's the practical kind of lived out specific things that you're doing to kind of make those connections, kind of bridge the gap between, I mean, honestly, someone like me who's going to say, yeah, well, we've always talked about adoption, and then going, okay, that's great, but now here's what we do. Right, like, what are those practical things that you guys are doing to kind of bridge those gaps?
Yeah, so I think our mission statement speaks into that, where we exist to equip the body of Christ to manifest the gospel to vulnerable children. So our job is not so much to be this standalone parachurch ministry who's going to do everything for you, but what we want to do is truly educate the church to say, look, the Lord in His Word has given us this command. And it's not a command that we should brush past or highlight with a Sharpie, right? This is something that we need to answer. He's called all of us in James 1:27 to care for orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself unstained from the world, right? So that's not something that we get to truly be optional. We don't consider the Great Commission to be optional, and we shouldn't consider these other commands in Scripture to be optional. So what we want to do is come alongside the churches and educate the staff members. We want to educate the pastor to say, hey, you could do this from the pulpit, and you don't have to be an adoptive dad. You know, you don't have to have been in the trenches of adoption to educate your church that this is something we need to do, because truly, adoption is just a portion of orphan care, because there's 153 million orphans in the world, according to estimates, right? And that's probably conservative, a conservative number, but only one half of 1% will be adopted. So that leaves another 152.25 million that are going to grow up, you know, either in an institution or, you know, not with a forever family. And so part of what we do is educate the church in that too. Like, foster care is part of that. My goodness, we have over 440,000 kids in foster care just in the United States. And these numbers are one thing, right? Numbers are great for telling stories, but they truly don't sink in until you get to know a face and a name and a story of someone that is one of those statistics. And then this whole thing becomes tangible, right? We can not only wrap our brains around it, but we could take that kid and wrap our arms around that kid and say, wow, this is one of the 153. This is one of the 440,000 plus. So in our education, we have curriculums we offer to the churches to use. We have different arms of the ministry. So we operate with five arms of the ministry. Pregnancy ministry is one of them. We minister to birth mothers and birth fathers who are considering an adoption plan or who may just need help with direction on where to go. And that's a huge part of it. And then we partner internationally with churches who are doing some orphan care. And in doing that, our idea is if we can say, hey, this church over here in, say, Togo is doing orphan care, how can they better accomplish their goal? Well, we're going to partner them with a church here in the States, and we're going to say to them, why don't you guys get together, right? This church in the States probably has the financial resources and a little bit of manpower to throw behind it on a couple of trips, and can really help out these churches internationally. And these churches then get together and form a partnership, and the international church is able to say, hey, we're going to do this. We're going to come in and into the orphanages or into these villages or cities where they live, and teach life skills, so that when these kids age out of the adoption process, which, by the way, can be as young as 14 years old, can be ineligible for adoption. That's crazy. That's mind-blowing to think about. We're going to teach them these life skills so that when they age out, they have something to fall back on, and they don't become another statistic of human trafficking or of drug use or of crime or of suicide. But they have hope, and they have the hope of Christ in them. So that's the biggest component of what we do internationally, is partnering with these churches to say, give them the hope of Christ, give them life skills, give them some education, and we're going to also train your workers to help do that a little bit more. So those are some ways that we jump into all of this. So training foster families, recruiting foster families within the church, and then and another unique ministry called Families Count that we have
that on your website.
Man, that is a cool deal. So love to dig into that some more. This is a unique ministry where it's a biblically based curriculum, 6 weeks long, that reaches out to at-risk families who have either lost their children already to the foster care program or are at risk for in danger of that. And this is something we hadn't seen. and in looking at it, looking through this several years ago, realizing that the size of that hole, that gap, was massive. We developed
what hole
when you say the hole to minister to these families, to the families, not gotcha. Just the kids. So, you know, rightfully so, the kids are a big point of focus. Kids are in foster care and orphans, but also realizing that in over half of the cases of kids in foster care, the goal is reunification. What are they going
to
do?
So walk through a listener to that point, because that's something that – so we have friends that I'm close with that do foster care, friends that do even kind of like those extreme foster care situations,
mm-hmm.
where they get the call at 11 o'clock. I mean, close friends of ours, this happened a few years ago. They get a call at 11 o'clock at night. Hey, a woman just left her baby at a gas station, mm. and she drove off. You know what I mean? And like – can you come take this child?
Right.
And they're like, yep, we'll be there in 10 minutes. And I mean, to me, what, you know, what blows my mind in those situations is how clearly that is a symbol for the gospel. Mm. Like, that's the desire to be a part of ministries like this, is the fact that it so feels deep in my bones. Like, wow, this shows the world what Jesus is like, right? You're able to point to this and go, see this, see how that story unfolded. Yeah, that's like Jesus with us. And they're like, okay, wow, that's an unbelievable symbol. But in those moments, what's the craziest is that in a lot of these situations where you see these terrible things, the state's goal is to reunify this kid with their family. Yeah. And it's easy to hear that and go, why the heck would we want to do that? But I always my wife and I will go back and forth on this, where she's like, man, that just blows my mind. But I'm always kind of playing devil's advocate, saying, man, isn't that what we want, though? Like, you know, like, I don't know. Is that hard for you guys to kind of wrap your head around, being in ministry like this, to see that and go, man, I kind of don't want to ever see kids and their parents get reunited when they've done stupid things like this. But also at the same time, you do want it, right? Like, it's a hard, I don't know. Speak to that a little bit. Like, is that difficult to kind of navigate even as you guys are involved in it?
Yeah, it's one of those things that kind of takes a retraining of the brain. So for me personally, like, I've been right there, but also knowing, like, the ideal family that God has set up and that God has ordained is parents and their child, right? It's the ideal family is not foster care. The ideal family is when you give birth to the child you parent, but we also know that that's not always the case, and really through the church, that was, so God's plan A is your family as naturally comes about, right? God's plan B is the church to fall back and say, be the fallback and say, you care for these children that are abandoned. You care for these children that are being neglected. You care for all of the, and the families, right? It's not just the kids, but it's also the birth parents or the home family that's kind of left out of that sometimes. So what we've done is come around the family with Families Count. And in doing that, it's actually a ministry for the church. So this isn't something that Lifeline puts on, right? This is something that we say, here's a curriculum, and we want you, the church, to have this, and we want you, the church, to be the vehicle that these parents come to know Christ through. Now, you can use our curriculum as a tool, and that's fantastic. Please do. That's why it's here. But this is something that is a church-based ministry. It's gospel-centered parenting class. And so a lot of...
Here's your goal, Tim, is really to not do what the church's job is.
Right.
Like, you don't want...
We don't want to be the church.
At the end of the day, yeah, you can't be everywhere, but the church can be.
Absolutely.
The church... Yeah, that's really, really, and I think even theologically, is so important for people listening. Like, man, the church is God's plan. I mean, the church is the goal. Like, the church is. I even saw it on your website. Just like the church is, you have a whole section just dedicated to like the church's role.
Yeah.
Right. Like, to not get lost in the weeds of, hey, God has ordained it that the church do this, that the church be kind of the hands and feet of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, you guys kind of almost seems like you guys work as like a facilitator to kind of like lock hands with people who might not have otherwise locked hands.
Absolutely right, man. And that's exactly what we want to do. And through things like Families Count too, one thing that we've seen that's really cool that doesn't get a whole lot of consideration, I think, by a lot of folks is that we see churches working together in this, right? So in an age where a lot of churches will be kind of and unspoken that they're in competition with one another.
I know, it's so sad.
It's so sad, but when we see Families Count come into play, we'll see churches working together. So we literally will see like 3, 4, 5 churches coming together to say, hey, let's do this as the church. Not as your church or as my church, but as the church. Let's take the gospel to these folks that are in a hard spot. And let's pour into them. So for 6 weeks plus, you know, they have this opportunity to pour the gospel into these families and these parents that are in a really tough place, you know, in every realm that they could imagine. So spiritually, they're in a dark place, right? Physically, they're probably in a dark place. A lot of them coming off of a drug addiction or something of the sort. Financially, they're in a hard place. So emotionally, they're in a hard place because of all of those things, right? It's a chain reaction that just leads through. So here's an opportunity for the church to go, no, you know what? And this is who we're called to be. Mm-hmm. And this is what we're called to do is to work together to see the kingdom grow. We don't need the kingdom of Tim or the kingdom of Dave to grow. Right, that's not going to do anybody any good. We need the kingdom of Christ to grow. We need to be effective for Him. And so this ministry, this parenting curriculum, is one of those tools that God's using to show that and for the church to see that and for the unchurched to see it. That hey, we're willing to break down our walls. And if I'm a member of my church over here and you're a member of your church over there, I'm not just bound by the walls of my church building or by the name of my church gathering. I'm going to come over here to your building if you're hosting it, and I'm going to help pour into them because the thing that matters is their soul. Mm. Not my church's name, but their eternal soul.
That's good. I like that. So to kind of change directions a hair, Tim, talk about your personal story with adoption. Like, I'm thinking about the people who are listening, right? Mm-hmm. And they're thinking, some of them are single, some of them are not married, some of them are newly married, some of them have kids, some of them don't. Like, does the person who's just listening to this podcast because they like ODG Apparel and they like what we were about, kind of give them the real life, hey, my wife and I adopted. Mm-hmm. How did you even get into that? What was the kind of the start to that for you guys?
Man, so that's a journey that goes back several years. I mean, that was a lot of prayer and a lot of talk and conversation for my wife. We had two boys from a previous marriage, and so I came into their lives. Our youngest at that time was 4, So that was really cool. I was got to be there with him, and then our oldest boy was 10 when we got married. So, and that was great having two sons. And we talked about, my wife and I had talked about kids, and for a while, like, I didn't want kids before I got married. So I kind of came into the situation where kids were already there and loved it. I mean, absolutely loved it. So just seeing how the Lord had changed my heart several years before we had gotten married was pretty amazing. And then we talked about, like, hey, do we want our family to grow? What does that look like? Do we want to have kids naturally? Do we want to adopt? And so really just as we walked along that journey of what could this look like, we went into an adoption information meeting was all this was at first. And, a friend of ours, where we had lived, they had adopted, from China. And so this lady went to work for this adoption agency as a local rep, and so hosted an adoption info meeting, and we jumped in there. And man, from the start, it was just like, whoa, this is probably the direction we're being led right now. And one of the things that stood out the most to me in that, was a line that someone had said that when you adopt, you don't just bring a child into your home. You're not just rescuing them physically, right? You are rescuing them spiritually. You're bringing them into a home where they're going to hear the gospel, where otherwise they probably would not. And that was mind blowing to me. I was just like, man, if that's truly what we're called to do, is to change the world with the gospel, then adoption is an amazing vehicle for that. So as we prayed through that, we prayed for several years, and we finally realized that we were called to that. So we started our journey looking at China to adopt. And as we got closer, we had some qualifications we had to meet, like the length of time that we had to be married, and my age was one thing too. So as we walked up to this line where we're like, okay, we're here, like we're able to fill out our application and start the paperwork and go down this trail, the week before we were eligible to do that, China changed their requirements and it made us ineligible. Wow. So dude, yeah, we were pretty crushed at that moment. You know, I remember just some tears being shed by my wife and I both, and some pain that we felt with that, and then just seeking the Lord, like, okay, God, what direction are we going to go here? So then he it was like we were following this trail, and we went from China to Guatemala and Honduras, and it was like everywhere we went, the doors were closed. So we were going, okay, we need to seriously think about what are we doing here. Still feeling the call to adopt, right, but just not sure where.
Okay, so that's a great question, Tim, and I want to get your thoughts on this. So I think that, again, I'm playing devil's advocate a little bit mm-hmm. here, but I think this is where some of the listeners might be. They might say, Tim, it sounds like God didn't want you to adopt.
Right.
All these closed doors, but then you follow it up with, but we still felt called.
Yeah.
So walk again, it's kind of off the reservation a little bit from the adoption conversation, mm-hmm. but I think it's important from a theology perspective.
Yeah.
So when doors are, there's this kind of, you know, oh, if God shuts the door, then I won't do it.
Right.
Right? And so I'm actually going to go all over the place, but the question I'm asking you is, when doors were shut, why didn't you just assume that God was telling you that this was not what you were supposed to be doing? Why did you keep pressing forward and saying, no, this is what God's calling us to? What was kind of the impetus for that? What was your thinking? What was the theology, the scripture behind that? Kind of why were you doing that?
Man, it's a tough road, but we knew without a doubt that we were called to adopt. We knew we were to be involved in orphan care through adoption at that time. And just seeing the doors closed doesn't mean God saying no, right? Mm-hmm. That is such a common misconception, because oftentimes God shuts doors or uses opportunities in our lives to help us grow, not to say no.
So good.
Pain.
That's kind of where I was leading you. I just wanted to, like, yeah, I think that's so important. So sorry, keep going.
No, it's all good, man. Pain and suffering is part of the gospel. That's what we're told to expect it. And any adoption journey that I know of contains some sort of pain and suffering. This was ours. Changing direction was ours. And so as we walked through that, knowing that, that God's called us to do this, we maybe missed the signals on where it was supposed to be, right? This wasn't something that was that I'm going to 100% say, well, God closed that door or God said no to that. We might have missed some signals because in the end, we start this journey halfway around the world in China expecting to bring home a beautiful little Chinese girl. And we end up, or we're going then, okay, maybe this is a sweet little South American girl. And it ends up, this girl was in our backyard, man. She was less than an hour from our house. And we end up adopting locally in Birmingham, Alabama. And we were able to take her home from the hospital, 3 days old. So we're the family that she knows. And she knows of her birth mother. We talk super openly about adoption and what that is and what it means for her. We talk about her birth mother. She knows her birth mother.
Is that something, I mean, I'm assuming that's intentional, but kind of what's your thinking on that from like a practical standpoint, like, and even biblically, like in how you think about Jesus and how he plays into this of like, you know, some people wait till they're this age to tell them that they're adopted. And how did you guys navigate that? What was the thought process on all that?
Man, we never wanted to hide it from her, because adoption is an amazing picture of the gospel, right? We are adopted by God through Christ, and without Christ, we stand no chance before God. With that. And our adoption eternally into God's family, we wanted to use that as an example for our daughter to say, hey, just as we adopted you, right? Jesus is doing this work for us to be adopted to the Father. And so we didn't want to hide that from her also because we don't view her birth mom as some sort of an enemy or competitor with us in the race for her heart. We view her birth mom as a hero. She selflessly looked upon the life of our daughter and said, I care enough about this life to not terminate, but to give her a chance. And so often, birth moms and birth dads really kind of get, discarded almost in the adoption story. But one thing that we do in our family and we do here at Lifeline is we celebrate birth moms because there's tremendous amount of bravery that goes into saying, hey, I realize I'm pregnant. I realize I have a life within me. And I also realize that me parenting is probably not the best option. So I'm going to give this child a chance, not only this child, but I'm going to give this family out here a chance and an opportunity to have their family brought together and you know, either be made whole or be made, you know, the next stage in when they're going. And so we made the decision a long time ago to have a semi-open adoption. We've met with the birth mom.
What does that mean specifically, semi-open?
Yeah, semi-open is where we'll meet with the birth mom or birth parents. And in doing that, we facilitate some of the direction and the communication through our social worker. But over time, over the years, honestly, those walls have come down a lot, and just seeing how God's changed my heart and the heart of my wife too, we communicate directly with our birth mother. So we've kind of taken that filter out almost, and communicate directly with her. So we've made arrangements to, are we there? All right. We've made arrangements to meet up and get together on separate occasions and celebrate our daughter's life and celebrate our birth mother as well.
Tim, you talk about semi-open relationship. Kind of walk us through what that means for someone who's kind of new to what adoption terms are and all that stuff.
Yeah, semi-open is where you can have communication with the birth mom or birth parents, and it's filtered through your caseworker or your social worker. So we can communicate with one another, but it's going, you know, through channel B over here before it gets to the end. And so that's how we started out was with birth mom and on a semi-open basis. sending everything. I mean, letters, pictures, communications and meeting requests, all of that went through our social worker. And over time, the Lord just softened our hearts to that and realizing that there wasn't really a threat, you know, in the relationship with the birth mom. So as time went on, we have gained that relationship to be open with her. So she has my wife's cell phone number, so they text back and forth, right? So my daughter was being silly one day. We made a video of it and sent it to her directly, just from a text message. So, you know, little things like that also show our daughter that, like, hey, this lady's not a threat. She's actually a blessing.
And so I think that's such a powerful, like, part of why I wanted to have you on the podcast is myself personally, I'm working through what adoption means and for my family and all that stuff. And I want people to hear those kind of honest conversations. And so I think that I've always viewed it that way too. Like, when my wife and I have talked about adoption, we've always thought, like, oh man, you know, adopting in the States locally, you got to worry about, like, almost like you said, the enemy. Like, I've always phrased it in a way of, like, something to be guarded against. Yeah. Right. And so, I'm just kind of really rethinking that as you're kind of chatting and talking through this. And so I guess the first question is, like, health of the birth parent, I'm sure, is important, right? Because sometimes there's not a healthiness there. And so how old is your daughter, and what's that look like on a day-to-day basis? Like, how involved is she? And you know, like, what does that look like when you talk about being open like that?
Yeah,
and celebrating that.
Absolutely. Our daughter's 8. She turned 8 in January. And, you know, one of the things that we have tried to do is collect. We've been able to collect some family medical history, which is an interesting thing that some adoptive parents don't have, because they have no idea where the lineage is, or where it comes from, or where any medical history exists. So we've been able to get that, and we've been able to understand, like, our daughter is a sickle cell carrier. That's important to know, right? So she's those types of things are just amazing to have in our data bank of things to pull out. And so we, you know, when I say we're open with her, like, the birth mom doesn't live with us or even really near us. She's about an hour and a half away from where we live, but just opportunities to say, hey, like, when my daughter had a birthday party, we were able to say, if you can make it, we would love to have you. And not only that, but, like, we know that our birth mother has 2 other kids. So she's got a son and a daughter also that are in someone else's custody, but she gets to see them pretty regularly. And my daughter knows that she has a half brother and half sister. And so she'll ask about them, right? So it's just those really cool relationships that we didn't have to sever. But also, when we talk about the health of the birth parents, and one of the things that the Lord really impressed on us was, we're a picture of the gospel to her, to the birth mom and to the birth father. And when we meet, we have opportunities to share the gospel and to show her that we're not threatened by you. In fact, we love you so much, this is what we need to tell you, right? Is that you're separated from God but Christ. And so those opportunities have presented themselves on numerous occasions. And whenever we get together, we find it a time of rejoicing instead of a time of like worry, and just being able to show our daughter too, like, hey, we love her, we love you, and also, like, we care about her spiritually, we care about her physically, we care about her emotionally, and my wife has even had individual meetings with our birth mom on a couple of different occasions, just for them to get together, for my wife to try to be an encouragement to her and to show her support and to show her that there is no hard feeling. There's just love, and we hope for nothing but the best. And ultimately we hope for her soul to be redeemed through a relationship with Christ. And so any chance we can share that with her is what we're really going for.
That's awesome. That's really, really powerful stuff. I'm excited because it definitely has flipped my mind a little bit to think about it differently. So that's cool.
It's a mission, man. It's truly a mission.
Well, yeah. And I think the idea of, man, you have access to this person.
Yeah.
And that's A, like you get to preach the gospel, but B, I think also the idea of, man, culturally we've so, I was talking to someone about it yesterday, we've gone from being okay with abortion in our culture to a place where we are like, man, if you are not happy about abortion, if you are not celebrating abortion, if you're not thankful that you had an abortion, you know, you're someone to be condemned in a lot of ways. And so the fact that you kind of flip the script on that and go, no, we're going to celebrate the mother who said, no, this is a life and I can't care for this life well. I think that is a really powerful thought process to immediately shift things and go, no, we're going to celebrate the person that said, no, this is a life and we're going to care for this life. And we're not going to like shun or shame this person. We're going to care for them well through this process. I think it's such a powerful kind of script flip for our culture.
Absolutely. And we need that more, right? We need that within the churches. We don't need to look at the women that maybe that do go through an abortion. Man, if they carry that through, we need to say as the church, hey, we love you and care about you. Mm-hmm. Let us walk alongside you through the pain that you're feeling, through the pain that you're going to experience, because there's going to be pain there. And man, if we had that more, and realizing what this is to be pro-life is not just to be anti-abortion. It's to be pro-life from birth to death. And so the church's call is not to just be against abortion. The church's call is to say, hey, if you choose to give birth to that child, we're here for you and we're here for that child and we want to care for both of you.
It's so important.
Foster care is one of those opportunities that we have. And so it's always interesting to see like how fired up we get about abortion. But on the other side of that, going, hey, if that child were to be born, am I willing to answer that call that God's placed on the church to say, you give birth to that child and I'll care for him or her?
That's that right there is a dagger. That's what the church needs to hear. Is it's so easy to be frustrated and yada, yada, yada about policies and abortion, but it's a whole nother thing to kind of stand in the gap.
It's so easy in our culture today. We're quick to pull the trigger to vilify people, especially people that we disagree with. And abortion-minded moms are some of those folks. And we, instead of loving them and caring for them and showing them the gospel through their decision and walking with them through it, we look at them as the enemy. That's not who the enemy is. Our enemy is like not flesh and bone, right? Our enemy is Satan, and he's using this tool to really divide the church from the world even more, and to show the world that the church doesn't care about you, the church doesn't love you, and all of these things, all of these tricks. But truth be told, man, we answer that call of the enemy a whole lot quicker than we answer the calls of the Lord. And the call of the Lord is to care for and to love and to show the gospel and to make disciples of all nations. And if we truly get behind the Great Commission, then we cannot afford to let the ball drop on orphan care. And that includes the birth parents.
That's really important. And I think that idea of vilifying and just kind of politically where we're at in a culture with all kinds of different things, the kind of separation, the fraction and the kind of breaking of our culture when it comes to like where we stand on things. I saw a quote the other day by a pastor. I can't remember who it was, but he talked about how Christians need to be reminded that we're not revolutionaries. We were never meant to be the people standing in the public square fighting for cultural change. But so much other times we were the people, you know, picking the kids out of the garbage cans and saying, no, we'll raise, like, you know, talking about first century Palestine where, you know, parents were just leaving kids out to die because they didn't want them, and just how the Christians were stealing the babies. And there was a time in that culture where they were like, Christians eat babies. That's what they do, because they steal all the babies that we want to die and they must eat them, instead of, so the Christians were taking them to care for them. But these same Christians weren't protesting to the Roman guards about how the laws should change. They just were caring for them, right? They weren't the revolutionaries. Right. They weren't the people, everyone listened to my ideology and my way that the culture should run. They were just They just filled in the gaps and cared. And I think that's such a powerful kind of phrasing and time and thinking in the middle of what we're talking about and just in the middle of where we're at culturally. It's like, man, Christians who just, instead of vilifying and screaming on the rooftops about how bad abortion is, not that we shouldn't, not that we can't, not that it's not a, there's not a place for that, but that if our response isn't to take that same grief and anger and frustration and sadness and turn it into caring for that mom and caring for that child and caring for fill in the blank life period, then really what is it, right? Because it's so easy to kind of be angry and to scream and loud and be loud about how angry you are. It's a whole nother thing to stand in the gap and say, I'll do this, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's we have become way too easily triggered on that anger. Mm-hmm. And you know, when we look at the words of Paul, he doesn't say if I have anger, right? He says all these things that I have, if I don't have love, then I have nothing. And that love needs to be reflected in all that we do, and it needs to be reflected towards the orphans and the vulnerable kids and the birth moms and birth families, birth dads, like everybody all around us. And if they were to see us truly living out what we believed, man, it would be a game changer.
Okay, so I'm going to redirect a little bit then. So to the people listening, right, who are hearing us going, cool guys, awesome, abortion, or not abortion, adoption, right? Like adoption. I should adopt, awesome, or I should care for our orphans. Jesus tells me that in James, I get it. What would be kind of your plea to listeners, or to me, even me, who's saying, yeah, I would love to adopt one day? Like what would be kind of your urging to, like, here's why, here's how, here's where, you know, what would be kind of your call to action for us?
And I think for anyone who is adoption-minded, definitely soak it in prayer. I can tell you without a doubt, like, there are a lot of people that have adopted that should not have adopted because it's messy. There are a lot of folks in foster care who have been in foster care that should not be involved because it's messy. And we're in our society today, we're so caught by the flashy new thing that once that shininess wears off and the novelty wears off, we're looking for the next shiny new thing. So soak any decision 100% in prayer and gather people around you to pray with you and to pray for you. If this is something that the Lord has laid on your heart, right, he's not changing. God is not a God of change. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And he's going to lay that on your heart, and he's going to keep it there. So gather a prayer team and look into options. Look into the countries that we can adopt from. Look into domestic adoption. Look into foster care. You know, you can do foster to adopt care, depending on where you are and how your local Child Protective Services operates. That's an option. There are several thousand kids in our American foster care system that have no chance of reunification. Their parental rights have been terminated, so they're waiting for adoption. That's a real thing. That's really here. So, man, the spectrum is wide open. I mean, we operate in more than 20 countries to facilitate international adoptions, and that's just a portion of what's there. Also, I would encourage folks to talk to their pastor, get some spiritual guidance on that as well, and really get some feedback. One of the things that we try to do as Lifeline is we want to come alongside the church and say, hey, if you have families who are considering adoption or foster care, or who are already immersed in adoption or foster care, your church is about to change. The culture of your church is about to change. The feeling of your church, the look of your church is about to change, and praise God for that, right? So many times we can look to the left and to the right of us in church, and everybody looks the same. That's not at all what it's supposed to be. So we want to tell churches and pastors and ministers, hey, be prepared for this. And we have some tools to help them with that. We have some tools to help with what we call wraparound ministries, where You'll form a team to come around adoptive parents and foster parents and say, hey, we're here to support you. We're here to wrestle in prayer with you and for you. We're here to provide respite care, because guess what? You're going to need a break. You may not realize it, but I mean, we have folks that'll get licensed through the local DHR or CPS specifically to provide respite care to their church family. And that alone, I mean, if there was nothing else, I can tell you we did the foster care routine as well for like, it was 2 years. We had kids in our house. So, and we did that, and we didn't have that. If we would have had someone to come alongside and say, hey, go out to dinner, let me keep the kids. Oh man, that would have been a tremendous blessing. So, so wrestling in prayer and respite care, and acts of service, being involved in that for a foster family or an adoptive family, you're being involved in orphan care. You're being involved in foster care. Cutting the grass, going and picking up groceries. I mean, these days, the way technology is, and we got the Walmart pickup app, right?
I'm all about that life.
Dude, me too. I love that stuff. That's a game changer. So you know, the family can call in their order, and you can go and pick it up for them. Mm. You don't have to pay for it unless you want to. But right, I mean, those little things that are just one item that seem like maybe small and insignificant to us, that might be the biggest burden that that family is facing that day, is loading up the kids in the car to go pick up their groceries.
Yeah. Well, I think about what you're talking about being the body of Christ, right? Like,
right.
The finger doesn't look at the ear and go, you don't really do anything. The ear doesn't look at the hand and go, you don't really do anything, right? Especially for some of the people listening who are like, hey, I'm in college. Adoption's a million miles away from me, or I'm in high school. Mm-hmm. It's like, man, you totally. Can drive, you can serve a family who's in this process, or who's thinking about praying, who's praying through this process. You know, like, just, you can bring it to your church and say, hey, I want to be a part of a church that's caring for orphans and widows. Like, I mean, this is a huge part of that. And so I think it's so easy to think, well, one day I'm concerned with that, right? Like, one day I'll worry about that, rather than today we can serve and be obedient to that call, right? It's so easy to talk about missions and to talk about different things that feel exciting. And I think you even talked about that shiny object, right? Like, even adoption and even foster care, it's great to get excited about it. But then it's funny you even brought that up, like a quote that I was looking through on one of your something on your Instagram was, I guess, from a mom who wrote a blog earlier this year. And she just has this quote in there, which says, quite frankly, there was considerable shame compounding my feelings because I wanted to love this child and run from this child all at the same time.
Wow.
And I've seen that before, like, even in my own circles of families who have struggled and dealt with, man, adoption comes with a lot of different, just stories and hardships, and you even touched on it a little bit, but just things that are difficult, right? It's not like, you know, people are bringing, you know, kids that need adoption are bringing trauma and all kinds of different things with them, and I think sometimes people will use that as a, see, that's why you can't adopt you know, someone who's older, that look, it's just, you know, you got to protect your own kids, you know those things, like that my own heart cries out and says. And then I think about what the gospel is, right? I'm kind of going off on a tangent, but there's some friends of ours who adopted a brother and a sister. They were, you know, older. They were 5 and 6 when they adopted them, I believe. And we've just watched them raise them, and it's been trying. Like, it's just, easy is not a word I would describe their journey. And I remember being with them, hanging out with them once at dinner, and it just being absolute chaos. Like, it just was like, we shouldn't have done this. Like, we should not have come out to dinner. We should have ordered pizza and brought it to your house and just, like, take and let you eat it in a room by yourselves. You know, like, it should not have.
Right.
And at one point they were trying to discipline the boy. And just, like, he was being kind of all over the place. Like, the whole restaurant was looking at us. They were just jumping around and being crazy. And he's the parent, I think it was the father, was trying to talk to him, and he's just being crazy and just dancing and laughing. And it wasn't being rude or mean or vicious. It was just high energy, a lot of energy. And I remember thinking, that's how I am. Like, I'm just like him. Jesus tries to sit me down and talk to me, and I'm like showing him my newest dance move, right? Oh, Jesus, look at this, you know? And he's like, can you focus for 1 second? And I just think about, no slight on this dad, but like how frustrated he was by it, and how I would be the same way, and I am the same way with my kids, and how Jesus never responds to us that way, like his adopted children. He never looks at us and goes, God, enough.
Right.
You know, it's like, I've told you 1,000 times, sit down and eat your stinking pizza. Right. Like, it's just that grace that he has, that ability for him to do that. Man. And then how that sanctifies the parents who adopt. And that sanctifies just the church itself. That's a part of it. Like, it just, to me, is such a clear, you know, next to marriage, adoption is the clearest symbol we get to show the world. And we get to do it well and with brokenness and limited, because God wants to sanctify us, and he uses difficult. You talked about it earlier. He uses the suffering and the difficult and the hardship. And if it wasn't for all these things, the people circling around us, that wraparound care that you talked about, man, how could anyone do it?
Mm-hmm.
I know I couldn't.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right, man. And we, you know, in that too, like, just a flashback into our personal story. We had a moment of pretty hard times, really, in it. In our story, we thought we were matched up with a child, and we got the call that said, "Hey, we're actually going a different direction for this child, to a different family." Mm. And so, in that time, like, I was just completely broken. And I was mad about the entire thing. I was mad about anybody connected to it. I was frustrated and mad at God. I was frustrated and mad with our social worker. I was frustrated and mad at the adoption process. But just in that growth, like you were saying, there was so much of the grace of God that came out,
mm-hmm.
and the face of Jesus. And he's going, "Hey, man, this is what I've called you to. Focus on me. Focus on me. I'm calling you to do this. It's going to be okay. I've got you." And then it was just like, all of a sudden, you know, the darkness had been lifted. Like, not trying to go too crazy on it, right? But it was like, oh yeah, there is purpose to this. Mm. There's purpose to this hurt. There's purpose to the healing process. And that was so that I could see God's goodness. I could see the grace of Christ in it, and I could see that, man, this is 100% what we're called to do.
Hmm. Yeah, and as you're talking, I think about when Jesus talks about, you know, anyone who tries to save their life will lose it, right? Like,
yeah.
So many of our, what we believe are like Christian, you know, responses towards not adopting or to not getting our hands involved into fostering and just all the like, yeah, but what if questions that we bring up are really us saying, but you might lose your life, but you might lose something if you do this, right? So many family members, when my wife and I talk about adoption, well, yeah, but you got to be careful because fill in the blank. It's like, but yeah, if I'm concerned about saving my life in this life, then yeah, obviously I would never adopt. I would never even think about it. There's too much risk. There's too much hardship. There's too much, man, I got to really protect what I have because I'm only going to be here for 80 years, if that. And so I got to make sure I don't do anything that could cause any jeopardy to what I've got going on, right? I mean, you wouldn't have any kids if you were concerned with this life, right?
Absolutely.
But because you're concerned with the next life, man, I love using the idea of you waste your life for the cause of Christ. Like go waste your life for Jesus in the sense of risk it all. Go... Because Francis Chan talks about that idea of, you know, the long rope and the little red line on it. And he's like, hey, people get upset with me because I risk this little red line because I'm worried about the rest of this rope. You know, this 100-yard, I'm worried about the rest of it. And you're getting upset with me because I'm taking risks here in this red line? No, you're crazy for not taking risks in this red line. You're crazy for storing up stuff for this little red line.
Man, totally. Totally. That's so good. And that's the thing, like, adoption does come with risk, but so does having a child naturally.
Period. Yeah. Yeah.
Right? I mean, having kids, having any relationship, like you said, if you were so guarded against what is mine now, then you don't want to have kids, you probably don't want to get married, and you may not want to have friendships.
Yes, exactly.
Because somewhere along the way, someone's going to let you down, someone's going to cause you to be a little bit more broken. So, seeing a picture of the gospel in that is tremendous.
It's powerful. Hey, Tim, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It's kind of it's been really, I feel like I'll have you on again because I need to like go, hey, Tim, my wife and I aren't just saying we're going to talk about, we're not just talking about adoption. We're starting that process and help me through it. And then we'll just do it live on the air and everyone can listen in to me asking you about how we do it.
That'd be fantastic, man.
So before we kind of like leave, like tell people where they can find you guys. Like if someone's hearing this and they're excited about even just getting taking a step forward in this direction of foster care, praying for people, like anything, like where could you direct them? Where should they be kind of finding you guys and finding out about what you guys are doing?
Yeah, the easiest way is on our website, lifelinechild.org, right? So lifelinechild.org, and navigating through that and just seeing some of the different ministry arms that we have and how we operate. We're also in, we have offices or representatives licensed in 12 states. So that's we've awesome. Got folks kind of spread out right throughout the nation. So you can go on our website. There's actually a place to say like where we are, where we work. So under one of our tabs of is where we work, and you can see the states that we have representation there. And any of our folks would love to just have a conversation about what it means. What is adoption? What does it mean for foster care? What does it mean for my church to get involved in ministering to these families? Or, I mean, there's a crazy thought too, right? How about ministering to the social workers that are involved in it every day? That's something we don't think about a lot too, but part of what we put into some of our ministries is don't forget about the folks with your local child protective services that are entrenched in it. Like they eat it, sleep it, breathe it, drink it, all of that. So lifelinechild.org is the easiest way to check us out and see the many different ways that we have available to help folks through this and to see have churches see this is the mission that the Lord's called us to do, part of the Great Commission.
No, it's so cool. Like it really is something that it's easy for people who are listening to this podcast to be like, that's so far from me. It's like kind of like when you hear a marriage series at your church and you're not married, you're like, I'm not married, who cares? And it's like, no, right. This is being the body of Christ and doing a very simple, clear call from God to care for orphans, right? Like it's so clear. It's so what it means to be the gospel. And then you get to enjoy the fruit of being a gospel symbol, right? Like you get to totally. Go, wow, this is what it means when Christ comes to save me. It's just like this. It's just like watching, you know, anyway. So I'm really excited that we had you on the podcast. And just so everyone kind of listening knows, we're also in the process of kind of working on some more partnerships with you guys. And we're excited to kind of launch that here in the future as well. So guys, thank you so much for listening. Tim, thank you so much for your time. It was honestly a blessing. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it. And man, appreciate you and all you guys are doing.
Cool. Thank you, Tim.
Thanks.
All right, guys, there you go. There you have it. That was another episode of the ODG Apparel Podcast with Tim Crist. So thankful for Tim for coming on the podcast. We really enjoyed that. If you like this, subscribe, share, give us a review on iTunes. Those are awesome. They mean a lot to us. And honestly, follow us on Instagram, share it on your stories, whatever it is. We really love getting out really cool content like this. I think it helps just remind people and push people towards Jesus in a way that's really powerful. This isn't really about selling our apparel or our stickers or anything like that. It's really just about really cool content that pushes all of us towards Jesus. So enjoy it. We look forward to the next one. Hopefully we are out and more consistent with those. So see you guys. Keep following Jesus. He's worth it.